And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com.
Hoosier fans, it's Indiana basketball time. IU basketball mini-series tickets are now available in six-game or three-game ticket packages, as well as individual games. This is your chance to check out the Hoosiers inside beautiful Simon Scott Assembly Hall. For more information, call or text 812-855-4006 or visit iuhoosiers.com. Go IU!
On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich and I are joined by Rick Bozich from WDRB in Louisville. Rick is preparing to submit his first top 25 poll of the college basketball season, so we talked to him about that, where Indiana is falling in his rankings, kind of what his thought process is as he goes through that. Now, we talk a little bit more about Indiana, some of the questions facing Indiana this year, and how good he thinks the Hoosiers can be. And then we also get a little kind of mini preview on Louisville, one of Indiana's non-conference opponents this year, a team that Rick obviously knows very, very well. And then we expand our focus to talk about the ongoing trial with the FBI investigation in New York about college basketball that has ensnared some of the top names in college basketball. Rick wrote a great piece about this, kind of calling out the hypocrisy of Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski. We have that linked in the show notes. And so we talk with Rick about all of that and about college basketball at large on this jam-packed and wide-ranging episode of Podcast on the Brink. And this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink is brought to you by our friends at Home Field. And Home Field is technically a new sponsor of the show, just started a couple of weeks ago. But the team behind Home Field is one that we're actually pretty familiar with and that you probably are too. This past August, the team over at Hoosier Proud, which was one of our sponsors here at Podcast on the Brink last season and has been a longtime sponsor for us over at the Assembly Call, they took all of their college designs and launched Home Field. And at their website, homefieldapparel.com, you'll find the comfiest and the most unique officially licensed IU apparel. Home Field was started by an IU grad, and all of Home Field's premium collegiate apparel is designed and printed right out of Indianapolis. And this week, you should check out Home Field's IU Champions t-shirt. This is one that I owned as soon as Connor put it up on the website. I ordered this shirt last year. It features the five championship years and a vintage IU basketball design. I absolutely love it. They have a lot of other ones there, too, that you should check out, but certainly check out this one, the IU Champions tee. And here's the best part. When you do that, our friends at Home Field have a special deal for you as a Podcast on the Brink listener. Use the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, at checkout, and you will get 15% off of your first order at homefieldapparel.com. That's promo code BRINK for 15% off at homefieldapparel.com. Home Field, wear one for the team. All right, and now here is our conversation with Rick Bozich on this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink. And we are joined this week on Podcast on the Brink by one of our favorite recurring guests, Rick Bozich from WDRB in Louisville. Rick, welcome back to Podcast on the Brink.
Thanks for having me. As soon as I get done with the podcast, I've got to formulate my AP top 25 ballot for this season. So if you guys have any suggestions, go ahead and drop them on me.
Interesting. Well, I might have one suggestion about a particular team that I would imagine you'll be considering. So let's use that as a jumping off point. Lots of topics that we want to cover with you today, but let's start with Indiana. You know, most of the preseason polls have Indiana anywhere between 20 and 30. You know, we've seen, you know, kind of the Big Ten projections. They were third in the, you know, the unofficial media poll. As you kind of start projecting Indiana for this season, where do you see them falling, both nationally and in the Big Ten pecking order?
That's a really hard question because I have gotten down to about 18 or 19 in my poll, and they're in the group of teams I've considered, and I did have them in, and then talked to a few more people and have taken them out, so I'm not sure which way it's going to go. But the one thing that keeps stopping me is when I think back to last season, it was like, okay, last game of the year, they lost to Rutgers in the Big Ten tournament, and, you know, a new season starts, it's a new group of players, and you think, you know, a lot of guys are going to be better, but I still think they need to do a little bit more proving to the point where you put them in the top 25, because it's not like they've got proven answers at a couple of critical positions. And the number one would be point guard.
Yeah. And is there anything that you know, we've had media day, we've had Hoosier hysteria, you know, and Archie talked about this with Jeff Goodman on a video that was posted on Twitter today, just talking about how it's, you know, it's a 3-horse race, obviously, you know, with Devontae and Rob Finney and Al Durham and a lot of competition at that spot. Have you kind of heard or seen anything that leads you to believe, you know, maybe one guy is going to take the lead at that position, or that you feel most comfortable with one guy as kind of the long-term answer this season?
My sense would be that Devontae Green is going to get every opportunity to succeed and be the guy. But if it doesn't happen, then, you know, I think Rob Finney will then get every opportunity. And I think Al Durham will be in the mix. But I see him really as more of a guy who will be a backup at both guard positions. So my sense is that they're going to really give Devontae Green every chance to prove that he can do it. And I think they believe that he can do it. And we saw flashes last season that he could do it. But until he actually does it on a consistent basis, and he'll be challenged early on. Because when you're talking about playing against Marquette and Marcus Howard and playing at Duke, you know, we'll have our answer pretty quickly, I think.
I want to go back to the AP voting for a second. I know you've done that now for several years in a row, but I'm curious, when you're doing a preseason poll, which in the end, when the tournament's selected, all this stuff is going to be meaningless, because unlike college football, you know, there's a tournament where everyone is included at the end of the year, for the most part, at least the teams that have an actual chance of winning. But the polls are something that are fun to talk about right now. I'm curious, when you do your preseason poll, what are you looking at most when you put that together?
You know, normally I look at a lot of other polls to see what other people are thinking. I've texted a few friends of mine who are either college basketball national analysts or NBA scouts who sort of made some of the rounds early this year and watched some practice about some of the teams they've seen, and asked people, like, are there any teams that I'm not thinking about but I should be thinking about? And people whose opinion that I trust, who, you know, don't really have agendas and remind me of things I might be overlooking. And then I kind of go back and look at each team and see who they have and who they lost, and then just, you know, try to do the best I can from that point on. And usually, you know, there's 8 to 12 to 15 teams that are pretty much of a consensus that everybody has them. And then as you get deeper into it, it all depends on, you know, what you think of their incoming guys, or how much you think of what the coach's track record has been. You can make an argument. You could probably, the last 8 or 10 teams in the poll, you could argue them all in or argue them all out, and come up with some teams that you leave out that other people are going to put in. But, you know, I think everybody this year starting out with some combination of Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, Gonzaga, and probably Virginia. Those seem to be the consensus top five, with Carolina being close to that group, and a lot of love for Nevada. Those are seven teams that I'm hearing the most.
From a Big Ten perspective, and you've already talked a little bit about Indiana and what you'll do with them in terms of the preseason poll, but which other teams, maybe if you're making a list, of who could be in the poll? Obviously Michigan State, I would assume, is going to be in there. Which other teams are worth considering from your perspective, at least in the preseason?
Yeah, my first run through, I didn't have any Big Ten teams in the top 10, which, you know, I can't remember ever a time that I voted that was the case. Michigan State seems to be the team that everybody likes. And a lot of that is just, I think, respect for Tom Izzo, because I think, if you looked at their lineup with a lot of other coaches, you'd be hesitant to put them in there, losing Jackson and Bridges to what, top 14, 15 picks. And, you know, the rest of the guys they have back are good, but they're not great. Michigan lost some really good players. It's respect for John Beilein, his longevity at Michigan and his coaching ability. Then after those two, it all depends on, you know, what you like. If you believe in Wisconsin bouncing back with all their players back, you can make an argument for them. If you show respect for Matt Painter and you believe that Carson Edwards is the best player in the Big Ten, you can probably slip them in the top 25. If you believe that Indiana is ready to take that next step forward and has maybe the best 1-2 combination in the league in Romeo Langford and Juwan Howard, you can argue for them. Some people are throwing Maryland in there. I had a coach yesterday that said definitely need to put Nebraska in there, even though they didn't make the tournament last year and had that good record, but didn't beat anybody out of conference. So I'd say at most I'm going to have 3 or 4 Big Ten teams in there. At this point, it's probably going to be 3.
Rick, you talked about how, you know, Indiana's going to have this really potent 1-2 punch with Romeo, with Juwan Morgan. And we talked a little bit about the point guard question marks. If I were to, you know, in Indiana, really, a lot of people seem to look at the Hoosiers as a team that have those question marks, but also that has a really high ceiling, you know, because of the presence of Romeo and Juwan, if those questions are answered in a positive way. So if I told you right now that Indiana will get good point guard play, like it may not be great, it may not be Yogi Ferrell level, but it will be good, solid point guard play, how high do you think the ceiling of this team is? Like how good do you think Indiana could be this year if that comes through?
I mean, if they get good, consistent point guard play, they could be, you know, in the hunt to win the Big Ten title and be a top 15 team. I really do, because they've got depth, they've got size, they've got athleticism. The one thing they still have to prove other than point guard play is outside shooting. And I heard when I was at the football game Saturday, I talked to a bunch of people up there and said that that's still one question, that they want to see consistent outside shooting, that Evan Fitzner brings it. But other than him, it's, you know, who else is going to make outside shots better than they did last year? So I tend to think if they get the point guard play, they're going to be really good. But that's the other question I have, is like who's going to make 3-point shots? And I know that Archie, he doesn't disdain the three, but he, from what I've seen of him, not only at IU but at Dayton, he's not as 3-point oriented as Crean was or as some other coaches are. He likes his guys, his guards, I think, to attack the rim a little bit more. So I still need to see somebody else who can sort of create his own offense and make shots. And Justin Smith and Romeo Langford are the two most obvious candidates to do that. And maybe Jerome Hunter, depending on how advanced he is.
Speaking of Romeo Langford, we're going to ask Rick for his thoughts on Romeo Langford here in a second. But first, I want to hop in real quick and talk about tickets. You know, getting tickets online can be far too complicated. I'm sure you've experienced this. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know who to trust. And that is why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place so that you can easily find the seats you want for a price that you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. For example, Indiana hosting Louisville later this year. It's going to be a great game. We're going to talk about that with Rick Bozich coming up here in this episode. If you want to go see that game, one of the best places to actually go and find tickets and find the best prices is going to be SeatGeek. And the best way to do that is actually to get the SeatGeek app, to get it on your phone. That's what I do, and it's the easiest way that I have found to shop for tickets. And you know, the reason why it's such a great way to shop for tickets is because the entire SeatGeek experience is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. They search multiple ticket sites and grade every ticket based on value, and every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop with confidence. And even better than all of that is Podcast on the Brink listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So all you have to do is just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code BRINK today. That's BRINK, promo code BRINK, and you will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to Rick Bozich.
You got a chance to see Romeo play a lot in high school, and you've seen a lot of really highly touted players, you know, obviously come in as freshmen. What do you think are fair expectations for him this year?
I'm not sure anybody's going to be fair to him, because the bar is so high, and he's it's a fan base that has starved for a guy like Romeo really since Eric Gordon, I guess. In terms of numbers, the counting stats, I'd say, you know, I think it's fair to expect 12 or 13 points a game. I know some people put more on him than that. I'm not really sure, considering how balanced and deep this team is, whether he's going to be scoring that much. And you don't really see that many freshmen score that much. But like 12 or 13 a game and, you know, three or four rebounds and a couple assists would be fair. I think most people would put the numbers higher, but I'm trying to be fair.
If Indiana's season doesn't turn out well, what and you're looking back on it, what do you think will have gone wrong if they don't live up to expectations?
Well, it'd probably be perimeter play again. I think, you know, point guard and outside shooting. I think they got the tools to be. They were a better defensive team last year than the longer season went on. I think they've got the size to be an even better defensive team this year, because they're going to be better able to protect the rim, and because they're bigger and longer. And I think they, you know, got more depth, so they can keep fresh guys out there. It's just whether are they going to have dudes who can just get you a basket, because we didn't see that last year. I mean, Robert Johnson, you know, could score, but he couldn't just go get you a basket. And Juwan Morgan can score. He's just not a guy you're going to throw the ball and say, go get us a basket. Sometimes he could do that, but that's not really the strength of his game. So that would be the thing, where they got a guy who can, when things go wrong, when the defense is really tough, when it's late in the shot clock, who's somebody who's just going to make a play in the last, you know, those situations in the last 4 or 5 minutes of a game where the game's kind of going back and forth, or it can tilt one way or another. You got to have somebody who's really confident and determined and productive, who's just going to, like, okay, as Yogi Ferrell did, you know, in 2016, and as Victor Oladipo did in 2013, somebody like that.
The Big Ten, the national title drought, I believe, is now 18 years and counting. And one thing I like to do every year is just kind of look at the incoming talent in the league. And this year, obviously, Romeo coming in was a big boost overall, but there's only one other school that added a McDonald's All-American. And I'm just curious, from your perspective, are you surprised that the Big Ten has gone this long without a championship? And do you think there's a direct correlation between kind of the league's inability to consistently recruit top talent in the absence of a national title in that time span?
Yeah, I mean, I am surprised, because it's such a long stretch, and other leagues have all delivered, and, you know, the ACC has delivered consistently. I mean, they had several teams that were good enough to win a national championship and just didn't. I mean, I think that Illinois team with Dee Brown and Darren Williams was good enough, but lost to Carolina. I think the Ohio State team with Connelly and Oden was good enough, but lost to Florida. And both Michigan teams, especially the one that lost to Louisville, was good enough, but didn't. But I think if you do step back at it and look at the amount of talent that's in the league, that it is down a notch or two from what it was back, you know, in the 80s. And 90s. And why that is, I'm not sure, because you've got good coaches in the league, you've got big facilities and fan bases in the league, but when you look at, you know, some of the, you know, the recruiting breakdowns in recent years, not getting some of the players they used to get.
Rick, we've been going through this offseason, you know, looking ahead at some of Indiana's Big Ten opponents. And obviously, you are down there in the Louisville area, and Indiana will be playing Louisville in the third of that three-game series that we've had with the Cardinals. This one will be in Bloomington and Simon Scott Assembly Hall. That is a program that has just been in a massive amount of flux over the past, you know, 18 months or so. What kind of team will new coach Chris Mack be bringing to Simon Scott Assembly Hall in December?
Yeah, I think they're one of the hardest teams in the country to get a handle on, because last year they underachieved, and they lost four players who, I think three of them were starters, and the other guy played quite a bit. And Spalding actually has made it in the NBA. And so they had significant losses, but the guys they have coming back are pretty talented. I mean, I think Darius Perry has a chance to be a good point guard. I think that Malik Williams has a chance to be a good player. I mean, he was a borderline McDonald's All-American type player that was recruited by Kentucky and recruited very hard by Indiana, and now he'll get major minutes. A lot of people think that Jordan Wara, their small forward, you know, shooter type dude, could be a breakout player this year in college basketball. And VJ King is their own only former McDonald's All-American who's sort of underachieved in 2 years here. But it's hard to judge how a guy's recruited for Rick Pitino's system will adapt to Chris Mack's system because they're different. And he's got to play him. It's not like he has any other options. They've got no freshmen. They've got a couple of fifth-year seniors who transferred in. And if you look at those two guys, he brought in Christian Cunningham, who fills a need as a backup point guard, and he brought in another guy named, I think it's Kwani Four, who's a hard-nosed, defensive-oriented guy from Richmond. So their calling card is going to be defense and rebounding and, I think, playing tough and physical. And what their X factor is going to be, you know, how well are they going to be able to score? Because last year they had stretches where they couldn't score, and they really haven't had anybody who's going to change that.
What do you think of the fit there long-term with Chris Mack? And do you foresee a lot of recruiting battles in the future between Indiana and, you know, Louisville as they, you know, I guess try to get a little bit more stability now under Mack? Do you foresee a lot of recruiting battles between Mack and Miller for players down there in Southern Indiana?
Yeah, I do see some because, I mean, they're both going to try and recruit locally. I know that I think he's tried to go up. He got Trayvon Blewett and he got Paul Scruggs when he was at Xavier. And if you can get guys out of Indianapolis when you're at Xavier, you have to believe that you can sell them on coming and playing in an NBA quality arena and playing in the ACC. So if he wasn't going to back away from Indiana when he's at Xavier, I don't see any reason that he'd back away from Indiana when he's at Louisville. He's got four oral commitments already for next season. None of them, I mean, one's local, David Johnson from Trinity High School, one's from Texas, I believe, and one's from Carolina, and I think two of them might be from Texas. So he's going to recruit wherever he can, and I think he'll go head-to-head with Archie, and I think he's going to be a good fit at Louisville because he gave up a job at his alma mater where he had a number one seed last year to come here because he really wanted to be here.
So the other big story in college basketball is this trial that is going on and, you know, up in New York, the big FBI case. And some of the big news over the last 48 hours or so are these, you know, text messages that seem to suggest that that Bill Self may have known a little bit about some of the help that Adidas was providing and steering some players that way, and kind of seemed to suggest that he thought it was okay because others are doing it, like Duke and North Carolina and those kinds of schools. And of course, you know, I've heard from sources with direct knowledge of the Duke and North Carolina cases that they just have absolutely no idea what's going on. Those sources, of course, being Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski from their very own public comments. And you wrote about this earlier today, a great piece that we'll link to in the show notes. But what do you think of kind of what we're learning in this case so far? And what do you think when you hear coaches like Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski try to act like this is the first that they're hearing of the seedy underbelly, shall we say, of college basketball recruiting?
You know, I think the case is terrific because I think the more that we all know about what's really going on, the better. I mean, it's anybody who's followed the game closely or been around the recruiting game for a while or talked to coaches, has heard all this stuff talked about or whispered about for many, many years. And the more that it's out there, I think the better. You know, Alex can tell you just from our past conversations with people in IU that, you know, some of the top recruiting battles were going on and the things that we'd hear, and it's always off the record stuff, but it was always makes you wonder about why such and such went to such and such place. So I think the more we know, the better it is. And, you know, I think if you've read from Dan Wetzel and Gary Parrish and all those guys who actually been up there, that nobody's surprised by any of this stuff. And then when you hear, as I wrote in my column, when you hear guys like Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski, who's, I mean, their legacies are established in the game. They've won national titles. They've going to go out on whatever they want to go out on their own terms. They've made money. They're in the Hall of Fame. For them to sit there and make the comments they made about, you know, this is just a blip, or they're dumbfounded by what they've seen. It's, to me, I don't know, disappointing is not a strong enough word. It's, you know, it's discouraging that they would try and pitch that narrative. And as I tried to point out in my story 20 years ago, when Roy was at Kansas, he went head to head with Billy Donovan when he was an up and comer at Florida and lost Mike Miller. And he wasn't dumbfounded then. He pretty much said in a story to SL Price of Sports Illustrated that he was going to turn him into the NCAA. And his sidekick, Eddie Fogler, had a very public outburst at Billy Donovan and SEC Media Days, saying that what Florida was doing was unethical. So I don't know why they try and say these things that they say, because if you talk to other coaches, they just kind of laugh and say, well, God, whatever.
One of the more disappointing things for me last week at Big Ten Media Day, and I wasn't there, but Ryan obviously was there, and I listened to Jim Delaney's press conference, and I think every question he was asked had something to do with this, and I think it was the Adam Jardy, who we had on the show last week from the Columbus Dispatch, I think had the last question and just asked Delaney about paying the players and whether that was on the table, his just kind of his overall opinion on it. And he seemed to completely dismiss that idea. What are your thoughts on where we go from here? It seems like this is eventually going to be headed for, maybe somebody's going to sue the NCAA, you know, based on their laws, the amateurism stuff, or there's going to be somebody challenge this organization, because it just seems like they're completely reluctant to let go of this model that everyone, I think, agrees needs some kind of change. So what do you think the end game is in all this?
My sense is the end game is to keep it the way it is for as long as they can, because, you know, the coaches and the administrators are doing quite well, and getting significant change is got to be a daunting challenge for them, not only because it changes the dynamic as it currently is, but there's so many different nuances and situations of different schools' ability to pay people. And if you pay people in this sport and this sport, how are you going to finesse it where you're not going to pay people in another sport? And you can make the argument in college basketball that, you know, players deserve to be paid. But when you look at rosters, I mean, how much does the 13th guy on the bench at a, you know, second division Big Ten school, how much does he deserve to be paid other than, you know, what he's already getting in terms of his education? And, you know, I don't know, would they get some kind of other, they get some other kind of stipend of some kind. It's so complex that I think in many ways that they're just kicking the can down the road to the next group of leaders to try and figure it out. I believe that. I mean, because I think when they look at, okay, we're going to pay the men's basketball team, but how are we going to do that without paying the women's basketball team? And then how are we going to do that without paying football? And how are we going to do that without paying soccer? And it's really a complicated situation.
Yeah. The only thing I would say to that, and I don't want to open this up to a longer conversation, because I think we could probably talk for hours, the three of us, on this, but, you know, it's no problem for these universities and these conferences to figure out, you know, Jim Delaney is the commissioner of the conference, so he's paid the most of the Big Ten employees, but, you know, the people that are below him in the Big Ten hierarchy in the Big Ten offices, you know, they're paid less. So why wouldn't they be able to apply that same logic to Romeo Langford as a basketball player at IU? Is obviously bringing value to that program, right? TV networks want Indiana on TV this year because they have Romeo Langford and Juwan Morgan, whereas, you know, somebody that plays field hockey for IU or somebody that plays, you know, runs track doesn't have that same value. So to me, it's like an inability to kind of see the parallel. I mean, that's kind of the real world that we all live in, right? You know, if you're good at your job or you're good at what you do, you earn more money in a marketplace. And so I just can't understand how the same situation doesn't apply here. And either one of you want to respond to that or chime in with your thoughts. I just think it's an interesting kind of point that they can't see that situation applying here. But obviously, Jim Delaney is taking a bigger salary as the commissioner of the Big Ten than his secretary. Is that not right?
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, I think that, I guess you worry about, you know, how's that going to play inside of a team? This guy's getting this and I'm getting that. I don't know. And the other thing that goes into the paying the players is just because you set up guidelines on what the NCAA is going to pay him, is that really going to stop people from giving him even more? I mean, I don't think you're going to eliminate the problem of unless you just say you can get whatever you want to get and it's not being monitored. Just because there's an NCAA rule saying everybody gets 5,000 or 8,000, do you really think that's going to stop schools from giving the really valuable players more than that? So, as I said, there's so much money now in the game. That it's hard to, whenever there's money involved, it's hard to distribute it all fairly.
Do you, Rick, given what we know, I guess what we think we know, and now what we're, you know, kind of coming to understand is true about the way college basketball operates. You know, you see the teams that are at the top all the time, and they're the teams, you know, that we're seeing their names a lot in this trial. Is it possible to succeed at the highest levels of college basketball consistently, you know, kind of doing it quote unquote the right way? Or is that, you know, at least with the current system, just kind of a pie in the sky notion that doesn't really match with the reality of what happens?
I hate to be that cynical, but I think everybody's got to do something. And it's all different levels of something. But whether it's people getting meals comped or, you know, trips paid for or cell phones or whatever. I mean, there's just so many different areas out there that I think that I'm cynical. I don't believe in the sort of the fairy tale of, you know, this school's the one school, or these are the five schools that are doing everything by the board. I've seen enough and heard enough to say that, you know, it's a transactional business, and guys who really, you question, like, why is that dude got his hand out, but they might, you know, I don't know. I think it's a transactional business, and everybody's looking to take care of themselves.
Has it always been that way? I mean, you know, obviously Indiana fans have long lived with the notion that, you know, when Coach Knight was here, you know, there might have been, you know, issues of his own creation with his antics, but that everything was kind of done by the book. I mean, has that always kind of been a fairy tale notion? Has that changed, you know, in recent years? You know, kind of how would you, I guess, advise Indiana fans to view something like that?
That's a great question. You know, I think it was other places that it was a more severe problem. I do believe that Coach Knight in many ways tried to keep everybody in check, and to a great degree did, but I'm not sure he could even be everywhere and oversee everything of what might or might not be going on. So, I mean, I know that when he was in the Big Ten, he always, he frequently complained about other schools, whether it was, you know, Illinois or Michigan, you know, when they had their pretty strong runs of recruiting, or he had some, you know, other famous recruiting battles where he lost guys and I think he felt like things were going on. So I think it's been going on back to the 50s and 60s just because it's a capitalist market. I mean, everybody tries to maximize their value whenever they can. And in, whether it's been money or, you know, I've heard stories that programs that used to be on Sundays that players would be hooked up with sort of like sponsors. And on a Sunday back in the days, I think the dorms wouldn't have food or whatever. And these kids would know to go to a sponsor's house on Sunday and they'd get a meal and could this is back before cell phones. They could make long distance calls back home to talk to their parents or get some money to go out and buy some clothes or whatever. I think that kind of stuff's been going on forever.
Well, yeah, I mean, shoot, just look at back in the 50s, I think when Will Chamberlain was deciding where he was going to go, Indiana was one of the final schools. And I think he even admitted, you know, Kansas paid him more and that, mm-hmm. you know, and so he ended up going there. And I think as the story goes, that ended up hurting Indiana's chances to get Oscar Robertson, because when Oscar came and met with Branch McCracken, the first thing Branch said was, you know, I hope you're not one of those players who wants to get paid. So, you know, it was kind of, right. And Oscar obviously didn't like that very much. So, I mean, it was, you know, things like that were going on as far back as then. So I guess it would be foolish to think that they're not going on now, given, and you kind of made this point in your article, you know, given how everything has just gotten bigger, the money, the exposure, the attention, everything has gotten bigger, all of the incentives would lead you to, you know, continuing to act in the same way or even, you know, in a more exacerbated way rather than the other direction. So just kind of makes sense.
Yeah, when you got, you know, mid-level programs where assistant coaches are making, you know, $150,000, $200,000. I mean, there's not even the elite programs. Those jobs are hard to get. And, you know, I've just talked to enough coaches who've said, you know, head coaches either know what's going on or they specifically don't want to know what's going on. And as one said to me last week, I mean, you're better off to get fired for cheating than to get fired for losing, because either way, you're going to get fired.
So yeah. The NCAA is obviously going to do something at some point after all this is over with. To me, I don't necessarily think the NCAA is going to have its own investigation, because as we know, they've been incapable of monitoring this themselves. And what better information are they going to have on their own than what the FBI has already collected? So do you think it's going to be pretty quick after this all wraps up that the NCAA is going to say this is kind of what we're going to do? I think they're going to have to do something, just at least from a PR standpoint. They can't have this FBI trial and then say, oh, well, this is it. We're not going to do anything to some of these schools that are mentioned.
Cleveland State's in trouble.
I'm not sure. You know, they really, as Wetzel's written several times, it's like they really haven't been at the trial, and that's been kind of disappointing. You'd think that as important this was to college basketball, that they would have some representatives there listening and taking notes and trying to learn from it. Individual schools have had people there, but in terms of NCAA representatives, it's been light to non-existent. So I'm not sure what they're going to do. I mean, they made a big dog and pony show last year of creating that commission and coming up with these recommendations that have generally been panned by people inside the game. So my confidence in them doing something, you know, inspiring is not real great.
Somewhere Jerry Tarkanian is really enjoying this trial, I have to think.
Jerry Tarkanian among many other people, but yeah, none of us can be surprised we've gotten to this point. I don't think what surprised me, I guess, is some of the names we're talking about. I mean, players who are involved in this thing. It's not like we're talking about Kobe Bryant and Kevin Garnett and, you know, LeBron James, guys who were like, when you saw them at high school, it's like, wow, those guys are dudes, gotta have them. I mean, the names that I'm hearing, it's like, really?
You know, the funny thing to me about all this is, and I know all three of us on this conversation love college basketball and obviously want the sport to be healthy, is I haven't heard any conversation about college football. I mean, if we're going to have this huge investigation into college hoops, you would have to think with the money that college football generates, there's got to be some skeletons in those closets somewhere. Just saying, just putting it out there.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it only came out because the federal government, though, this thing operation was involved with some college basketball people. But you're right. I mean, nothing's been said about college football, and that's where the real money is. I mean, people can make the argument that individual players are not as valuable or as well known in college basketball to a greater degree. There's a few exceptions, but One guy can't change a program in college football as much as he can in college basketball. But if you don't think some of these dudes who are really good offensive and defensive linemen or quarterbacks aren't really valuable as high school recruits, then you're pretty naive.
I just want to see the movie for this FBI trial someday. And I just wonder if they're just going to name it Blue Chips 2 and just get right out there with it, or try to brand it under something completely new.
Yeah, you guys but need to get Matt Nover on the podcast, man. He'd be a great guest.
We should. Oh, man. So let's end this with something positive, Rick, because the college basketball season is coming, and this will obviously be, kind of the subtext for the whole season, and we'll continue following it. And it's interesting. But we all love college basketball because of the games and the teams. And so what are, outside of Indiana, even, what are just one or two or three storylines in college basketball that you're really excited to watch this year that have you really anticipating the opening of the college basketball season?
I think it's a wide open year. So that'll be fun. You can make the case for a lot of different teams. And after Loyola's run last year, I think that even inspires more people to think that they have a chance to do it. So that would be one story. I think a second story is that a lot of really good freshmen to look at this year. You got the kids at Duke who some people say 1, 2, 3 best recruiting class Mike Krzyzewski has had, and with Indiana playing them, and for me, Louisville also playing them, and Kentucky also playing them. That's going to be fun, to watch. And I'd say probably for a third thing, and I know that you guys are more Big Ten oriented, but this seems to be a year where SEC basketball is going to be more back into the conversation. I think there's 4 or 5 SEC teams that could be in the top 25. And if you really want to add to the SEC dynamic of it, we'll see how Tom Crean does at Georgia. So, beyond what we just talked about, those are 3 things that I'm interested in seeing.
You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Bozich. Definitely make sure that you read the article titled Coach K. Roy Williams' Airball Opportunity to Lead College Basketball. It was a really both entertaining and infuriating read going through that. Just the hypocrisy there. But we always appreciate your time and your insight, Rick. And we look forward to having you on Podcast on the Brink during the season.
All right, let's play some hoops, guys.
Let's do it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We will be back next week with a new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers.